Osiris.
Hi, listeners. I want to tell you about a cause that I'm involved with at Heritage Radio Network. HRN is celebrating its 15th year, and to celebrate, we're deepening our commitment to giving voice to the next generation of food system storytellers, and we need your help. Our internship and fellowship programs help activate new possibilities for underrepresented and underestimated young people through experiential journalism, audio engineering, and production training. Through these unique programs, HRN helps food equity stewards build essential workforce readiness skills that expand their potential and foster economic mobility. Please consider supporting these critical programs. And with a minimum donation, you can be entered to win a dinner for two at an amazing restaurant in one of eight cities and tickets to a concert at a great venue in one of those cities. We have incredible partners across the country who have donated, as they also share our passion for helping to educate the next generation of food system storytellers. Check out heritageradionetwork.org/15 to donate and enter to win today. That's heritageradionetwork.org/15 to donate and enter to win today. And make sure you donate before March 31st. Thank you.
Hey everyone, it's Cam Hurt, host of the Best Show Ever podcast, and we have got a second season coming out very soon that I am very excited about. We've got some very cool special guests, including musical acts that we all love, like Karina Reichman, Daniel Donato, Jake Brownstein from Eggy, Rick and Peter from Goose, and many more. Tune in for new episodes dropping on Osiris Media March 5th on the Best Show Ever podcast.
Hello, folks, and welcome back to the Best Show Ever podcast, about the best shows that people ever saw in their lives. I'm your host, Cam Hurt, and very cool last episode we got going on here. Very cool last week of episodes we got going on here. This is the grand finale week of season two. You've made it to the end. If you're listening right now, all of season two is out and available for you anywhere you're getting podcasts. We've got a great episode out this week also with actor and comedian Chris Witoski. We've got all these great interviews out with a bunch of great musicians and fans. But right now, you are listening to one of the coolest episodes, one of the coolest interviews that I got to do within season two, and one of my favorite people on the planet now, Karina Reichman, local badass to the New York scene, national kicker of asses, bass player extraordinaire. Karina has been having a huge last year, huge last couple years, playing her original music with her new band. She's got Joyride out right now. She is on tour, kicking ass, making things happen. And it was really, really cool to get a chance to have her stop and chat about the best shows she's ever seen. She is also a massive music fan, and that is evident in these episodes, or in this episode. She was stopping back from Late Night with Seth Meyers for like 1 second before she left for her tour to do this interview. So I want to thank her for stopping and having interest to even do this at all. And it's just really cool to watch her ascent over, you know, this last little stretch here. We're at, you know, Fish at the Sphere, and there are people wearing Karina Reichman shirts to the Fish show, and a whole bunch of different shows. I think that people who have seen her live have been really struck by what they've seen. The amount of fun that she has on stage is palpable. And the amount of fun that I have chatting with her, I think, is also palpable in this interview. She's just the best. And I hope to become quick buddies with Karina. This has been an incredible season to put together. For everyone who's been supportive of the podcast, I cannot thank you guys enough. We'll do a little bit more of this in the intro. But season two was just leaps and bounds better than I could have ever expected. And now it's all due to the support that you guys gave the podcast. So thank you guys so much for listening. Thank you for listening to this. If this is your first episode of Best Show Ever, enjoy it. Great selection for a first one. But season two has been fantastic, and I hope you enjoy all of it. But for right now, before you go and enjoy all of that, enjoy the next hour of chatting with Karina Reichman. It's just going to be sweet. Enjoy yourselves. Karina Reichman.
Ever wonder what a punch from Elton John feels like?
Or how you'd cope with having turned down the chance to be in Nirvana?
or what signal Keith Richards gives when he wants you to get the hell out of his hotel room.
Fans of Too Much FE Perspective don't have to wonder, because they've heard these exact stories and a jillion others on our podcast. I'm Alex Hoffman, former tour manager for Radiohead.
And I'm musician and comedy writer Alan Keller. On the TMEP show, we get guests like Nancy Wilson from Heart, Jeremiah Frates from the Lumineers, and Modern Family's Julie Bowen to tell us things they may have only shared with their therapist, clergy, or a TMZ stringer.
So join us on Too Much Effing Perspective. That's EFFING Perspective. The only podcast you crank up to 11.
Hey, this is Dewey Halpas, host of Peer Pleasure on the Sound Talent Media Podcast Network. Join me each week as I explore another long-form conversation with one of your favorite musicians, actors, comedians, or creatives. From Chino Moreno of the Deftones, John Gorley of Portugal the Man, to Fat Mike from NoFX and Ian MacKay from Fugazi and Minor Threat, we go all over the map. From Fall Out Boy to Slayer, Peer Pleasure has it all. Check us out now on Sound Talent Media.
Hell yeah. I'm just honored, tickled pink that you'd want to be on the show. So how did the relationship between you and Seth start? Because you've been doing Seth Meyers, which is sick as hell.
It's crazy, dude. I literally just came, literally directly from 30 Rock to this podcast, which is great. But this is my seventh stint on the show since September 2022 was my first hit, if you will. And it comes from Sid Butler, who's the bass player on the show. He's also in an incredible band called La Savie Fave, which is a sick, New York kind of indie punk band from several years ago, but they still tour and they're still like the shit. And the guitar player on the show is named Seth Jabor, and he's in that band too. He was the one where, he had an obligation. His brother was getting married in Italy or something. And it was like, oh, wow. And he asked me if I would be interested in subbing in for him. And I said, absolutely. And it was actually, I got the call literally when I was mixing my album at the barn, at Trey's barn up in Vermont. Wow. And I was like, oh, shit. And I told everyone who was there, I was like, hang on, like, I got to talk to Sid from Seth Meyers. Like, I think he's going to tell me some cool shit right now. And anyway, and he totally did. And then I shadowed him. That was in May 2022. And then the show didn't happen till September. And then the fucked up thing that happened, Cam, is they found out that I also play guitar.
Which, oh, no.
Between you, me, and the wall, do I play guitar? Like, yes, I do. Am I like the most confident guitar player? No, like I write on guitar and like I'm like I started on guitar, but like I really turned into a bass player in the last like 8 years or whatever. So anyway, they find out I like can get around on guitar. And then since that first time, September 2022, I've filled in on both guitar and bass on this show numerous times. And I'm just like the relief, what do they call it, the relief pitcher. One of the two dudes goes down, which literally yesterday I get a call, Sid, the bass player, has food poisoning. Are you free today? Are you free tomorrow? And I'm like, totally. And actually, between you, me, and the wall, and everybody who's listening to this, I was literally loading up a tour van here. And I have these two lovely 18-year-old boys who are driving my van with all of my gear in it to Texas as we speak. And we get the van. It's like a rental and whatever. And like, it's all good. They drive it right in front of my apartment. All good, blah, blah, blah. And then it just dies. And we have to jump. Oh. And like, so we're jumping this van and I'm getting this call from the producer like, yo, you free today? And I'm looking at these 18-year-olds who I'm about to entrust with like, many thousands of dollars worth of gear and like going to put, I'm just like, oh yeah, man, it's noon. That sounds great. And it's like 10:15. Anyway, they got the van running. They're in the deep south right now. It's all good. They made it rain and it's great to be on Seth Meyers. Yeah.
It's so crazy how it works. Like when you are an entertainer, like at the drop of a hat, it's like, hey, opportunities are knocking and you literally have to say yes. It's also funny how like you're in the middle of you know, working on your project, doing something super fucking sweet at Trey's barn.
Right.
And then you get a call. You're like, hey, actually something else fucking sweet is happening right now too. Like, it's just
with
like,
the people so that you're working on the other thing with also think is sweet. You know what I mean? I'm like, well, this is sweet, but that's also sweet. And everybody's like, totally.
That's
you know?
Totally sweet.
Well, just nothing but dope shit. No, I mean, literally, I pinch myself. Like, this is ridiculous. And I love show businessy shit. You know what I mean? So like to go to Seth Meyers every day and like have a glam squad that like, you know, and wardrobe and hair and like all that stuff. And just everybody who works there is so pro and so kind and cool. And you meet everybody. Like, I love stuff like that. You know what I mean? Like my 13-year-old self would have been like, what? And then of course to be able to travel the country and play music that you wrote under your own name to, you know, people who are stoked to see it. That goes without saying, you know what I mean? But it's crazy shit, man. Crazy shit is happening. Crazy shit has come to light.
It's so cool to watch happen. And I mean, like just to have people who are down to listen, you know, that seems like nothing to folks who listen to music. They're probably like, oh, of course I'm going to listen to this dope music. But it's like, it's the best. It is the best to have an audience that's like right there with you and wants to grow with you and stuff, wants to kind of claim it as their own a little bit, you know, like
who knew, man, who knew? I know it's the most shocking thing. It's just like, wow. Like, you know, if you build it, they will come, you know, or whatever. And it's just like, I'm kind of like experiencing that right now. And it's just like the most humbling, crazy, like, you know, to write music and have it be enjoyed. Like, I don't, like, it's crazy. I don't know. The whole thing has been super surreal. And, I'm heading out on tour tomorrow. So you're catching me the last possible minute we could have done this.
Your gear is already on tour.
Oh, the gear is already there. Yeah. The 18-year-olds are good to go. And everybody's going to be alive, healthy, and well by the time they get to Austin tomorrow.
I love it. I love it. How did the relationship with you and Trey start? You got to put him on your album and work at the barn. That's pretty sick. How did that come to be?
It's crazy. I mean, I grew up, you know, on the Upper West Side of Manhattan, and I went to school with Trey's two daughters.
Oh, shit.
In middle school and whatnot. And so, like, I was a friend of the family first,
sick,
you know, for the longest time. And, you know, it's, you know, Trey always likes to joke, like, nobody slept over at their house more than me.
Yeah.
And whatever. And just, like, you know, we were just pals and stuff. And then I started going. I literally had no idea their dad was in a band. I had not a fucking clue. It was when they were disbanded, like we became friends, you know, and then they came back in 2009 and they were like, hey, you know, dad's playing Jones Beach. Like, you want to go? And I was like, oh yeah, right. Oh, I think.
For what?
right. And then I was on iTunes, you know, and I iTunes'd the studio, bouncing around the room and the studio chalked us torture. And I was like, okay, this is okay.
Yeah.
I wasn't like particularly sold on it, but I was like, oh, like I would never turn down going to anything. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I was like, hell yeah. And you know, they brought me, and after my very first show that I like, literally I was driven home to my parents' apartment building, like in the tour bus, you know what I mean? So it was just like some of the craziest experiences, but basically, I mean, you know, that's when I was 14 or 15. And then, you know, but I'm just a friend of the family at that point, like, and whatever. And then it wasn't until I was 22, I got this gig playing with Marco Benevento. And when I started playing with Marco, I remember like kind of distinctly like this thing like kind of happened. I was like backstage at a fish show. I think it was SPAC. And Trey was just like, dude, Karina, playing with my buddy Marco, like that's insane. Like, you know what I mean? And like you sort of saw like Trey just be like, oh shit, like Karina's like a musical peer, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, playing with a guy that I used to play with and that I love and respect, you know what I mean? Like that whole thing just was a crazy shift. And then like when I started writing my own music, that's when Trey like really lit up, you know, and we ran into each other at Peach Fest 2021.
Mm-hmm.
Like at that time, like that was like by far the biggest, best slot of music that my band had ever played in front of, like, for whatever reason, thousands of people descended upon the smallest stage at Peach Fest. And it was so just like, and we like rose to the occasion, you know what I mean? Like we
had,
it was one of those moments where you're like, oh shit, like we, yeah, like very proud of that performance still. Like, I'm like, like, you were young and dumb and you didn't know what you were doing, but you fucked that shit up. Like, that was great.
Yeah.
That shit was dope and whatever. But then it was the next day, actually, Trey was sitting in with Celise, and me and my band were like, you know, there were maybe 12 people behind the stage, including me and my band. And Trey saw me. We hadn't seen each other since before the pandemic, you know? And he just ran to me and he like freaked out about all my original music. And he starts just like laying down. He's just like, dude, City Kids, like we listen to that around the house all the time. Like naming all. And at this time, by the way, I have 5 singles to my name. Right. Yeah. So he's going in and like naming each one of them and what he likes about each of them. And I like, to be honest, I had no idea that he kept tabs on anything I was up to.
Busy guy.
Why would he? I don't know. Like, I know, like, you know, he follows me, but like, okay. You know what I mean? Like, what is that? Yeah. But anyway, it turns out he kept pretty close tabs. And then like, we had a very intense, like 30-minute long conversation before he went on stage. And then he was like, you know what? Can we like get lunch sometime? There's a lot more of this that we should talk about. And because we were talking about, he was like, but you need an album. And I'm like, I'm working on one. And he was like, he just lit up. He was like, oh, anyway, that turned into a 4-hour lunch, which the next day turned into a very long phone conversation. Just like, you know, lots of incredible mentorly advice, like just like, you know, oh, well, if you do this, then you should do, oh, what about this? And have you considered this and whatever? And anyway, the result of this incredible, maybe 2-week long period in, you know, July 2021 was that Trey was going to co-produce the record. He would play on it. And he was giving me the barn and giving me Bryce Goggin. Like, so like, he just completely blessed literally everything. I was like, what? And he was like, yeah. And I was like, what? And yeah. I mean, that's maybe the most succinctly I've ever explained this to somebody, but you know what I mean? That's sort of the progression of things was, you know, you're a kid, you're friends with the kids, it's all good, blah, 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 blah. You start playing with Marco Benevento, you start writing your own music. He likes it. Next thing you know, he wants to help. And that's like his hugest thing is about original. It's about original music. He cares so much about furthering the tradition that he has furthered himself. You know what I mean?
Right.
And it's just like, he doesn't want to see it die. And he thinks, you know, the only way forward is, you know, not cover bands. You know what I mean? Like, he's just like, no. And he tells me like, you know, when you're a band and you start playing a cover, and people know it, they go woo, and you get addicted to that woo because you're like just feeding them something that they know. And he's like, you see, when you hear woo, ignore it. You can't think about that shit. There's no that. Like, you have to break, you know what I mean? You have to bring new original shit into this world, and it's not going to be woo immediately. You know what I mean? But like, you have to get used to that. And that's super important. That's just like one of 100,000 things that I've imparted from this man. So. Yeah.
I mean, obviously to grow, you have to keep breaking through. And like, you know, you could play Joyride forever. People love that song. People love the album, but like, it's going to take growth. And that's like, yeah, you can feel it at a Fish show when he busts out new music, like he's still doing, which is insane. But like, you know, the crowd's like, whatever. And then like 2 shows later, he's played it in a way that is now like, now it's embraced. And, you know, he saw that down the road, you know, because he's done it so much. And super cool mentor to have. Also just so funny of like your friends being like, do you want to come to my dad's show? And you're like, oh, that's cute. Yeah, I'll come to your dad's little show. And then it's like ripping ass Fish show.
Oh, like, geez. Like, yeah, I was like, wait, oh, shit. Damn. You know, I had been to Jones Beach before that show for very weird concerts, actually. But that was definitely like, I've never seen Jones Beach look like this before, you know? Like,
yeah, right.
That was really crazy. And then a week and a half later or whatever it was, they took me to Bonnaroo. And that's going to be an honorable mention later. We're going to honorably mention that, but we're not there yet. Not there yet. No,
a little Tarantino.
Put a little thought to this. Let me tell you, I'm not just fucking going through the motions here, Cam. I'm here to talk about some shows, some good, some bad, some honorable. I'm out here. I'm prepared.
Man, let's get into it then. Let's totally get into it. Well, let's start with the first one. What was the first concert you ever saw in your life?
Dude, I'm pretty sure the first like actual concert I saw was, I think it was Benny Tuchman's 12th birthday at Madison Square Garden. We're talking 2007, and we're talking, listen to this, you're going to love it. Fall Out Boy, plain white tees, cute is what we aim for, and the gym class heroes. That is a four pack of something, let me tell you.
Listen, in 2007, too, that's like...
It was high, you know, the emo undercurrents of, you know, this sort of pop punk, whatever... shit was going on, you know, and I will say, I mean, I was really into that song Sugar We're Going Down, you know, the Fall Out Boy tune, like still, I mean, you still hear it and it still slaps. I'm not going to lie to you.
And I loved that album. I loved Fall Out Boy. I was such a big Fall Out Boy fan and that tracks.
It really was kind of something. And just, I mean, of course, like I right there, I definitely, you know, I fell in love with the concert experience. Like I was like, holy shit. I had been to Madison Square Garden for basketball games and whatnot, but like to be there for live music was a whole other thing. And I very quickly was like, oh shit. And actually very quickly after that show, Van Halen was playing the Garden. And shit. I like, figured out, like, I don't know, before that moment in time, like, it's funny. I sort of didn't realize that you could buy concert tickets and go, you know what I mean? I was like, you know, we can go. Like, I remember being young and seeing Aerosmith on the Beacon Theater marquee. And I loved Aerosmith as a kid. And I was like, holy shit. And I would drive by and be like, Aerosmith. Wow. You know, but the idea that you could actually go to something like that was very much lost on me. Like there was no, I wasn't like, yo, mom, like, can we go? I was like, there, it just exists.
Yeah.
And it's awesome, you know, or whatever. Like, you can, imagine what it must be like or whatever. So anyway, I remember quickly thereafter, I got some Van Halen tickets, 2008, you know, and it was a big kind of, that was, you know, that was like the shit that I was really into, you know. I was into Van Halen, like, you know, my plane was going down, you know what I'm saying? I was whereas the Fall Out Boy was just like, that was a good thing to do with your 12-year-old friends. And it was nice that there was a birthday party that took me to the Garden for live music. But, you know, very quickly thereafter, the Van Halen show was like, oh my God, like that really blew my mind. And then, yeah, things started spiraling very quickly after that. After that, it was like, ooh, 2008, I'm in eighth grade, you know, and just like, you know, the floodgates have opened. You can go to concerts and boy, can you, when you're from Manhattan and like, just faced with it. And then I was like, you know, on every mailing list and blah, blah, blah. And you'd get the emails from Bowery Presents and AEG and Live Nation. It's like, so-and-so is coming to your town. So-and-so is coming. I'm like, holy shit. And then very quickly thereafter, all of my friends were just people I either played music with or went to see live music with. And then, and here I am, I stand before you today, you know, a decade plus after that. And, the same, you know, it's good when you find what you like when you're like 13, 14, and then you just stick with it. It's great. Really no need for figuring much else out. It's kind of awesome. I'm like, cool. So I still play music and go see music. Kind of end of list, Cam. It's kind of what we got going on over here. I like eating at nice restaurants.
You've never changed.
I like going to the beach, but that's, you know, after that, I don't think we got any other hobbies, you know, or anything. I think that's where it all ends. Yeah.
Was, you said that you were like super into Aerosmith and Van Halen. Was that your folks' music like influence on you, or was that you finding that yourself?
That's a great question. That's very much me finding that myself. And my folks are like the coolest people ever, but not in the rock and roll way, if you will. My parents are academics and they both teach at Columbia University, you know, and my dad's a, you know, 77-year-old philosopher, and my mom's 73 and, you know, teaches French up there, and they're, you know, they love what I do so much, and they come and see all my shows, and they're so, dude, they're like in tune with the set list changing. Like they're like,
it's deep, amazing,
like super deep into it. And they love, like when they hear music, they love it. But like my dad listened to classical music when I was growing up while he wrote, you know what I mean? And that's basically, and like a little Brazilian music somehow was on the agenda. Like Caetano Veloso was adored in our house. I don't know why. Love that guy. It's fucking awesome. But all right, you know, but there was literally like, there was no Beatles, no Stones, no Zeppelin, no like all the shit that I like ended up really gravitating towards was certainly not like the doing of my parents showing it to me. You know, it was a lot of like friends, parents, you know, just, and then of course, like you get, I was sort of the type of kid who like, you know, once you're interested in something, you just go down the fucking rabbit hole and search everything. And, you know, for my birthday, I'm like, I want the Rolling Stones 500 greatest albums of all time book, you know, whatever. And then downloading every single one of them on LimeWire. It probably takes, you know, 14 weeks or whatever to get them all. And they're all mislabeled and all that shit, you know, but, no, I think that's good in the end for me. Like, I think the fact that this interest in rock and roll, or at least like popular music since 1950 or whatever, 1955, little Bill Haley and the Comets, and then kick it off. You know what I mean? Like, it's a self-motivated thing. It was never like, you know, my parents weren't like, let me show you, happiness is a warm gun, you're gonna love it. Hope you love it and carry on our tradition of loving this. You know what I mean? Like, it wasn't like that. I just sort of developed it myself and found all my like-minded friends myself, you know? So I think that's cool. And it makes you not, I don't know. It, for me, I think it's cool because it just sort of was like, yeah, no, this is my thing. Like, they have it. Yeah. You know, but this is like very much my interest and they're down with it and they love that I love it and it's all good. But like, you know, my parents are professors, man. It's different. It's different shit.
And it's so funny that, you know, that music has just been more from their era, you know? So then you're coming in, you're like, you've ever like, you guys never checked out Rush? And they're like, no. And you're like, what the hell?
Dude? Totally. I remember being like, yo, Ma, you got to check this out. Like the first fucking 6 seconds of Tom Sawyer. It's like the greatest 6 seconds of recorded music. You're going to freak out. And she's like, oh, I do like that. But that's, I, you know, definitely, I grilled them on several, like growing up, I was like, you couldn't have shown me the White Album. You couldn't have shown me Revolver. Like, come on, it's not that hard. They're like, well, yeah, we listened to that shit when we were growing up. It's great. But like, I don't know, just sort of
moved on,
you know, kept on like doing stuff. I'm like, what do you mean? What are you talking about? Like, how about a little Let It Bleed? No. No, you couldn't.
What? Nothing.
Monkey Man?
You're like, you're doing the reverse dad game. Like, they're like playing some Beatles in like a grocery store. And you're like, oh, who sings this song? And they're like, and you're like, come on. You know this.
Dude, that is me to a T. And it's almost sad. I'm an only child too. So, you know, like only children, they say, you know, we peer with adults or whatever. Yeah. So like, I'm like, you know, the kid who wanted to have like, you know, the most knowledge about this shit, you know what I mean? So like, yes, I'm 13 and I'm like, yes, let's name all the Beatles albums in succession. And then the Zeppelin catalog and then the Sabbath catalog and who plays bass in Black Sabbath, huh? Who plays, you know, like all that shit. So I'm that
kid. Mean, it rang true in that Rush video, you know, and I think there's a lot of like, you know, folks who are more our age get a lot of shit for being like, oh, you think you're heady because you bought a Rush shirt or whatever. And it's like, no, I actually like, I probably know more about this band than you do because I researched it incessantly because I had the internet, dog. So I know everything, you know.
It's like, I'm not going to lie to you. The internet really helped me watch, you know, La Via Straniato at Pink Pop, you know, 1970, whatever, 100 times.
On demand.
It's there, man. It's the chair. And you could study what Getty does with his feet and his hands. And then you could reverse it. And then you could play it at 0.5 speed so that you could learn that shit. Like, yeah, no, that's real shit. And I'm glad I have a fellow Rush fan in you, which I appreciate that. And when you made your Rush video, which went, you know, just about as viral as my stupid Rush video, I was like, oh shit. Now we're best friends. Love it.
Oh man.
Love it.
When I saw that video, I was like, oh man, we're about to be boys.
I
bring up Rush in like every episode of this podcast. For people who listen to the podcast, they're like, you really like Rush? I'm like, I guess.
Like, dude, it's fucking the holy triumvirate, dude. What are we going to say? It's important.
I can compare anything to something that Rush did, for sure. We could be talking about literally anything. Man, that's sick. That's so funny. Do you have a worst concert you ever saw in your life?
Oh man. I mean, I was thinking about this and you know, my head goes to like, before I was like a you know, call it a professional musician or call it whatever you want to call it, right? But before
and we will call it that.
Okay, let's call it that. That sounds
we'll
good.
We'll call it that, yeah.
Before I was whatever I am right now, I worked at a concert promoter or a promotion company called Rocks Off that like was very, you know, famous for putting 3-hour long shows on boats that went around Manhattan. Like, sick. And then, you know, you put a band on a boat, you know, sell 600 tickets, people get loaded. It's crazy. Great experience. Fans are wonderful. Blah, blah, blah. So that yeah. I did that for 7.5 years, like working as the GM of this company and whatever. And the other thing that we did was we like would charter buses to take New York City fans from like, you know, 34th Street to like the, no, not the Prudential Center. Like, what do you call? Oh yeah. The PNC Bank Arts Center and Jones yeah. Beach and all the stuff, like stuff that's just a little bit outside of New York that like, you know, your licenseless New Yorker ass doesn't really want to drive to per se or whatever. Or, you know, we would market it as like, it's like a party bus, but you know, you sell 56 seats, people come, you can drink, you'd leave, you know, you leave your stuff on the bus, treat it like a locker room, go to the show, and then blah, 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 et cetera. So I, when I was working for this company, I used to work these buses. Yeah. And I used to be like the MC. I would like check everybody in on the will call list, bring everybody on, everybody would be seated. And then I would take the mic and I'd be like, what's going on, Black Sabbath fans? How are we doing? And crack jokes, whatever. And then I would just be like, you know, treat this bus like your locker room. You can leave anything on it. My man, Kangaroo Jack, the driver, which is a real guy, by the way. Kangaroo Jack will be here all night guarding your shit with his life. But one thing I got to tell you is when the show's over, 30 minutes after the show's over, this bus is leaving. And if you're not here, we're leaving without you. So, you know, do yeah. with that information what you will. Anyway, this usually works very well, the system of taking people to these concerts. But on a few occasions, things went horribly awry. And, you know, I have so many kind of scarring experiences doing this. They definitely tainted my impression of the shows. So I yeah. like, you know, first I'm going to say worst show would be me running a bus to Jones Beach to go see the Dave Matthews Band.
Damn.
The year is probably 2013. I'm probably 19 years old or something like that. And I just went through all those motions, blah, 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 blah. And the, like the bus, first of all, we had like a million, like, you know, routing errors, basically. Like the driver didn't have the GPS put in for like a bus, which meant that the clearance was all wrong. So she couldn't go under these.
Oh, things. Shit.
It took about 4 times as long as it should have. And then people like have mutinies and they start screaming at the driver and screaming at me. And I'm just like trying to play a little ants marching over the fucking speaker.
You know? To calm them down.
Calm them down. I'm freaking out. I'm like young, you know, and it's like a whole thing and people are like losing their shit. Anyway, some people like in the middle of like traffic insist to get off the bus on a freeway and Uber to the show or whatever. And I'm just like, oh God, oh sweet Jesus. Oh God, it's all gone awry. And then like, I remember arriving at this Dave Matthews show, just despondent, and like people yeah. had jumped ship. People are pissed off. They want refunds. I'm like, oh my God, am I responsible for this? I'm just I don't even know. But the whole thing was a disaster. And you just feel so bad about this situation for these poor people who have missed the entire first set.
Oh no.
Because of the wrong turns and the disasters and the turning around and the blah, 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 and whatever. So I'm like, oh God. So I remember just being like, you know, I don't want to like say I was crying, but I was at the second set of this Dave Matthews show, just like, dude, what the ever loving fuck has gone wrong in my life such that I'm responsible for these old people not getting to the concert on time and the whole thing being a disaster. So that, you know, I would put that pretty high. I would put that pretty high, but I would be lying to you, Cam, if I didn't say that, you know, didn't happen on a few other occasions, notably Kiss and Def Leppard being yep. bad. I remember like one of the wheels of the bus, like caught fire and like shit was all right. Like things, you know, those, I would say those eras when it went well, by the way, big success, great service.
Oh yeah.
Great service. When it went bad, really just tainted my experience of the whole thing, pal. Really just not what you want. Oh. So I'm going to go for that Dave Matthews concert as my worst.
And just like thinking of like a bus full of Dave fans, yeah, all in their stuff. They've like, some guy's got like a Carter jersey on.
100%. 100%.
They got their visor. Yeah. They're drinking Everclear.
Oh my God. Like if it had all gone well, it would have been their best night ever, man. Like they would just be, yeah, like, yeah, like look at us, man. Oh God. I also, I've softened up a lot since then. Like now I'm a total, like I'm in, we're cool. Me and, you know, I'm into the Dave Matthews Band at this point. At that point, I was like, yeah, a big metalhead and a big fish head. And I loved the Allman Brothers Band, the Grateful Dead, but I was like, dude, Dave Matthews, I can't get behind this guy. Are you serious? Like he wears, yeah, his guitar above his nipples. He fucking, it was so goofy and so fratty to me. I was just like, oh, I hate this. Like Fish is cool. Dave sucks. I don't think that at all anymore. I really respect his shit. And I love his songwriting. Yeah. Just to let you know how much I've matured in the last 10 years. But you know, at the time I was like, dude, this is so brutal to listen to. Everyone's upset. People are Ubering home. I'm fucked. Like this whole thing is a disaster. So anyway, that just to put that in context for you, it was not exactly like I was like, oh yay, at least I get to hear Trippin' Billies tonight. I was like, oh fuck me, this is the worst fucking shit I've ever heard in my life. Anyway,
I gotta be out here on the lawn with the most Vineyard Vine shirts I've ever seen in my life.
Literally the vibe. Literally the vibe. I'm like, oh God. It's like Fish fans, but like 100 times worse. I'm gonna fucking throw up. Oh yeah. Yeah. So that ranks high. But again, now to reiterate, Dave Matthews, if you're listening, big fan. Love your shit. Carter, I worship you. Get a little Rapunzel in there, and I'm like, yo, I am ready to go. A little two-step. I'm in. I'm so down now. Everything is good between me and the Dave Matthews Band now. Just putting that out there. It wasn't, yeah, it wasn't then. I was really into Slayer. I was into Metallica. I was into Rush. I was into Black Sabbath. Like I didn't, you know, like a guy playing.
You can't be seen at a Dave Matthews lawn if you're into Slayer. You can't just be.
Man, like it was already like liking Fish as much as I did. I already was kind of like, all right, like people don't understand that this is like really like proggy and complicated and awesome. They just think it, yeah, like, is like mellow. Right. And I'm like, no. Like it's fucking awesome. You don't understand. Like, awesome, you know. And then with Dave Matthews, it's like, oh boy, I don't have a leg to stand on with this shit. I am not going to defend it. Yeah.
I saw myself a good deal of Dave shows back in the day. And I think you could have guessed that even if I didn't say that. I think you could have been like.
You know, it goes either way here. It's all good. It's a safe space, man. It's all good.
I'm this target demo, man.
I'm with you right like now. I'm fully, you know, sometimes I even have Dave Matthews Tourette's like walking around. I'm just, yeah, like, you know, lost myself just yeah, like wow, damn Karina, all right.
It's an intoxicating way to speak and sing. And if anyone ever caught you in New York, like letting out a little baby, like walking down the street, that would be good shit.
It's definitely happened at this point. Yeah, no, I'm telling you, I'm a changed broad. Things have changed for me. I've softened up. I'm like good to go. You know, no problem. I love it.
You got a pair of boat shoes.
Really into cornbread. You know about cornbread?
Hell yeah.
I'm like, yeah, all right. This one cooks. I like this. I enjoy his sort of sardonic banter. Like, he's like, this song is called number 41 because it's the 41st song we ever wrote. All right. You know, and I'm like, yeah,
bust into it. Yeah,
I do it. I'm like, this guy's great. He's funny. He's self-aware. Like, it's me who has the problem. You know what I mean? Like, he's all good.
Yeah.
I've grown, Cam. I've changed, man.
That's the episode of TV is you go to a Dave Matthews Band show being like, this is going to suck. And you get cracked open.
Totally.
And you become, your heart grows three sizes that day.
I'm like, my dad, we live in Rowayton. I drove my dad's Mercedes to the show. Would you like a grilled cheese? Like, Jesus Christ.
You got Birkenstocks.
Yeah.
And boat shoes. You got Birkenstocks over your boat shoes.
I'm dying, dude. The whole thing is great. The whole thing is so great. Yeah. Totally. Let's put that in our showroom.
Well, it's... Well, and it's hard to pick your best show ever. And so do you have any shows that you would be remiss that you wouldn't bring up on the podcast as not the best show ever?
You know, yeah, I mean, there are several, and I'm glad you give people, you know, this opportunity to really, just, you know, lay it all on the line here. There are many. I mean, there are more than like it's almost my brain is just flooding with incredible memories. I would say that Bonnaroo 2009. 15, you know, like when it wasn't the first night of Fish that like I understood as being like what I was kind of like, oh, okay, like right on. But it was the next, and they, you know, me and Trey's two daughters and my best friend Isaac, who I have a podcast with as well on the Osiris Network, inappropriate.
Nice.
Isaac's little brother, we're all there and we're in the practice room watching like Fish rehearse with Bruce Springsteen, you know, and yeah. I was not lost on me, you know, that was like some crazy ass shit. And they're like running, you know, Proud Mary and Mustang Sally and all this. And I'm just like, whoa, like in Glory Days, I was losing my mind. And that show, I was kind of like, yo, I get it, you know, and that just sort of from that point onward, I was like, I think there's something to really be understood here from this band. You know what I mean? And then I, you know, the rest of that summer and henceforth, I you know, basically became a complete, you know, savant nerd, whatever you want to call it, and learned so many Fish songs, guitar and bass, like just, you know, me and my friends, what we did, we jammed that music among other things. But like, that was deep. It became canon. It became like what we did, you know, we went on Fish tour. We saw a million shows, you know, yeah. That would be, that ranks high, that moment of like being at Bonnaroo 2009, taken by the Anastasios and just being in this whole thing. You know, we were backstage with Snoop Dogg. Like there was one, the last day, the backstage was split between Snoop and Fish. And it was just like, this is so sick. And the whole thing was just like completely knocked my brain open. I knew it was at that exact moment where I was like, I didn't know I would be a professional musician, but I was like, whatever I need to do to be around this, if that's taking tickets at the door, if that's mopping up afterwards, if that's working at Ticketmaster or Live Nation, if that's, you know, working for Rolling Stone. I didn't know at the time. I was a freshman in high school, you know?
Yeah.
But I knew that I would work in music. I didn't know what it was, but I knew whatever, I needed to be close to it. And that was a huge one, you know? Another one, moving right along, same summer, actually, same summer. I'm a huge geek out Nine Inch Nails fan. You have to know this.
Damn. Guy.
Big.
Sick.
Big, big, big travel to see him. I've seen him at I know you're an LA guy. I've seen him at the Palladium. I've seen him at the Bill Graham. I traveled to see them. Like, I'm like very, damn, very into Nine Inch Nails. And
very sick.
In 2009, kind of reverse fishing it. You know what I mean? In 2009, they were waving goodbye. It was their wave goodbye tour going away for a little bit, as opposed to yo, 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 we're back on the scene. Fluffhead, you're crying, you know.
Right.
So we're reversing the whole script on all that. Anyway, so they are on tour playing what they claim to be are their last shows. And on that tour, they played two nights at Manhattan's own Terminal 5. Terminal 5 is not a beloved venue around these parts. It's, you know, I personally have had some really excellent concert experiences there, but people by and large think it's a swag venue, and which is a shame because it's a 3,000 cap venue on the west side of Manhattan, and it's huge and ostensibly beautiful, but the sight lines are really tough if you don't get your spot in time and blah, blah, blah. And basically Bowery Presents, the company who owns the building, when they built Brooklyn Steel, they took all of the negative stuff about Terminal 5 and were like, okay, on our next venue, we're going to fix all of this. And they really did. Anyway, okay. Nine Inch Nails played Terminal 5 two nights, and I went both nights, but one of the nights, you know, I remember they played Reptile, one of my favorite songs off the Downward Spiral. and the dude from Bauhaus, whose name, it's almost pathetic that I'm forgetting this guy's name right now. He's a fucking legend. Singer of Bauhaus descends from the ceiling, hung from his ankles, with more strobe lights and more haze than you've ever seen in your entire life. And he utters the first line, which is, "She spreads herself wide open to let the insects in." And I was just, wow. You know, and then he's going, "She leaves a trail of honey to show me where she's been." And I'm like, dude, what? It blew my 15-year-old mind. I was like, this is the sickest thing. I was crying. Like, I was just like, it was so, like, that's the thing about seeing Nine Inch Nails. And I think why I like them so much. It's such a visceral, aggressive, but also tender, but also weird, but also incredibly musical experience. Like, it's just like, I don't know. There's something about Trent Reznor and his intensity that translates to everything he does, you know? And I am hooked on it, have been since 2009, you know? And I was just like, dude, I walked out of that show being like, that was one of the greatest things I've ever seen, you know? So that's a heavy one, man. That's a heavy one. And then, you know, just because it's more recent for me and it just stands out as something where I like, literally, like I almost, you know, killed everybody in front of me by virtue of going so ham. But we have to mention it. It was Rage Against the Machine at the Garden last summer.
Whoa. Yeah.
That was just a thing, dude. And I was in my friend's, you know, corporate suite, like floor suite, extremely fancy, you know, JP Morgan vibes where I'm just like, uh-oh, y'all ain't ready for what I'm about to unleash. Y'all ain't ready. Uh-oh. It's like, I shouldn't have been anywhere else in the building, to be honest, but it was a wonderful seat and a great view for your girl. But I was just like, I mean, I had been waiting my whole life to see that band, you know? And then,
yeah.
I know every word, every nuance, like that shit was just, and it went, you know, it was one of those things where the whole place erupted. And of course I've watched every live Rage Against the Machine video on the internet, you know? So you've seen these like crowds, 90,000 people in Sao Paulo going crazy for Guerrilla Radio. And then you're there at the Garden. You're like, oh my God, it's happening. And it's these four dudes that we, you know, I feel so connected to these fucking four dudes. I've been listening to them my whole life. I'm just like, dude, they're doing it. And it's just that amazing blend of metal and hip hop.
Yeah.
It's every single time. So that really blew my mind. That's a recent sort of like, I got to mention that because that was something.
I mean, there's so much cool stuff in there to unpack of what you just said. But I mean, shit, when you talk about like Nine Inch Nails and Rage Against the Machine or like any sort of like metal or metal related outfit, like you're people who aren't familiar with that music think about the, like you said, aggression and like the visceral nature of it. But like because of what they create in that aggression and like, the command that like you talk about those old Rage Against the Machine videos, like the command they have over like a massive, massive crowd with how aggressive they are and how hard they turn it up. Like they're able to get to these very, like you said, like sensitive and like emotional moments and that they are equally as in command of in those moments, almost more so. And you can feel like the room locked in on like what's going to happen next. That you're just like waiting for,
oh my God,
this eruption. And we talk about tension and release on this show like all the time when it comes to best shows ever.
Sure.
And those bands, I mean, some of the best to do it. I mean,
gross. Oh my God. Yeah. Honestly, today on Seth Meyers, we were playing Kick Out the Jams by the MC5 as our like audience warm-up song. And I was listening to it, great song, obviously, blah, 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 but it brought me to the Rage Against the Machine cover version of it on their like covers record. And I listened to like a bunch of that record, which, you know, I definitely grew up on, but it's been a minute. And I was just like, oh my God, like their version of Microphone Fiend by Eric B and Rakim. Just, I mean, I was on the subway this morning, like, yo,
headbanging,
staring at me because I'm going absolutely ham on the subway train. Nobody can stop me right now. I'm just like, they, you know, the tension, the release, the, you know, it's so impactful. It's just like masters of bringing it hard. I don't know. So yeah, definitely that's real shit, Ken. That's real shit. And those, I don't know, like for me, like a moment like that, where every, like, and especially with this groove based music, you know what I mean? This stuff is about, like, you're locked in, and this four piece is just like absolutely just so tight and so good. And you know the song so well. Nothing like it, man. Nothing like it. So I was very glad.
Yeah, there's nothing like it. And bands, those two bands, I haven't gotten to see Rage Against the Machine or Nine Inch Nails, but I can imagine that they can go from 0 to 60 very quick. They can explode on a dime.
I would say Nine Inch Nails has a lot more sort of nuance to their music. You know what I mean? Nine Inch Nails is a very, very, you know, cerebral, interesting act in the sense of like they can get super tender, you know, whereas Rage Against the Machine kind of doesn't, you know, which I love both for what it's worth, you know what I mean? Like, I don't think that you need to be multilateral to be good, you know. I think you can just fucking do this one thing really well, unite the people. That's fucking incredible. I'm in fact really jealous of that, you know, people who do one thing really well. Fucking awesome, you know. Not that, and I would also argue, you know, I'm not saying that Rage is one speed the whole time. I don't think that at all. But Nails is like, dude, like Trent goes over and plays like fucking piano ballads, you know what I mean? Like, and then it's like, like absolute screaming, complete lunacy, strobes, metal, fucking crazy ass shit with a blend of industrial vibes, and you know, you're dancing, you're rocking, you're doing all the things I like, you know. It's really, it's a hell of a show. But next time they play I'll definitely fly out and I'll take you. It's gonna be great. You don't even have to ask me.
I'm gonna look like such a wuss at that show. Like, you're gonna be in there moshing and I'm gonna be like, I don't know.
Like, oh my god, Nine Inch Nails, so crazy.
I'm used to just wiggling on a lawn in my Birkenstocks.
Like, Karina, this is not Boyd Tinsley. Like, ooh, no, it's not.
Different show.
Listen, it's all good, man. It's all good. Different experiences.
Different cup of coffee.
Amen. Different day. Different
roast. But what about your best show? The best one you ever saw in your life? I know it's hard to pick.
It's so hard to pick, but you know, when push comes to shove, I think this one ranks above all for a lot of reasons, and you'll see why. But the year was 2013. I'm about to go into my sophomore year at NYU, and there's a VMA after party at the City Winery.
Yeah.
Not a venue that I'm like would ever fight any battles for at all. In fact, I would often avoid it because I like to avoid hummus and crackers type shows. You know what I mean? Yes. I'm like, okay, great. Like, we don't need to see Martin Sexton tonight, like at the City Winery. Like, what the fuck? No offense to Martin. God bless him. But I'm kind of good, you know. But anyway, this was a very special night, and it was billed as a new power generation featuring CeeLo Green and Larry Graham. And I was like, okay. And so New Power Generation, that's a Prince relay, you know, basically everybody sort of had an inkling that Prince was going to show up. Me and Isaac and our friend Jake, we basically were like, yo, I'm pretty sure Prince is going to show up at this thing. And the whole thing, it starts at like midnight and we're like, oh, hell yeah. All right, here we go. New Power Generation. Let's fucking go. So we go. Awesome music. Shit is popping. We got our boy CeeLo Green. We got Larry Graham, who for me, bass player, you know, I'm like, dude, this is so sick. What the fuck? Amazing. And then 2 hours go by, maybe more. And everybody's, you know, whispering, is he going to come out? Is he going to come out? The vibe was high. Everything was right about it. By the way, this is a weeknight, very much not a Friday or Saturday. And fucking his purple majesty takes the stage.
Oh my God.
In like a 400 cap club, you know, on a weeknight at about 2:15, 2:30 in the morning. And I'm kid you not, he did not stop until 6 a.m. To the point where Isaac and I, we were, you know, 18 and 19 respectively at this concert, you know, and whatever. So we were just like, good to go. We didn't have a job. We didn't have any responsibilities. We didn't have children. Like, you know what I mean? We're just like, fuck yes. But the attrition rate was ridiculous. Like, people were leaving because he played for so long and so late. So I never will forget the sun coming up, and you can see it through the windows of the City Winery. And Prince is just going off. He played 38 songs that night. And I just looked
at him. Oh, my.
I was like, there's absolutely no way that that's not my best show ever. There's no way. Like, what else? What on earth is better than that? I really couldn't tell you. It was just like, and it was so funny because at the end of it, to say that there were 100 people left at the end of the night would be an exaggeration. I want to say there were maybe 70 people there at the very end, but we were good to go. It was just funk on funk on Prince on funk. It was just like such a surreal, like, yo, like, I can't even believe we were lucky enough to be here and we're experiencing this. And special night, man, special night. And then just walking out into broad daylight, New York City, people are going to work. People are out and about. They're running. They're like living normal lives. And, you know, I'm like, oh, wow. Holy shit. Like, what do we do now? And I remember like trying to go to bed at, you know, 6:30, 7 a.m. and just being like, dude, this is different. This is fucking different. So, yeah, I think that's probably my best show ever.
Yeah, that feeling like you're still buzzing from the show, but it's the sun is up already. It's not like you got home at 11, you know, and you're buzzing from the show. It's like, you know, and Prince is like, you hear the greatest musicians and performers and entertainers ever like share their stories like a fan when they talk about Prince because he creates these once in a life. It's like everything he ever did was a once in a lifetime moment for everyone who was there. And that's like,
he's a magical creature. He's magical.
Yeah.
You know? So it was just like that. Just like you said, you were just like, I can't even believe he created something like this for us. And we're here and we're teenagers and it's not lost on us. You know what I mean? It was just really, that was some crazy shit. And, you know, God rest his soul. Gotta say, huge loss for humanity. That is just, you know, kind of the best to ever do it, if you ask me. I don't know. I can't name you somebody I like more than Prince, really, you know.
I just ultra talented, driven, creative dude who just, you know, yeah, like created an aura around him. And, you know, like he's a guy that I never got to see live. And anytime Prince comes up in conversation and there's someone who's there in the room who had seen Prince live, it's always like my best show ever is Prince. Cause he's just, like you said, it's just the most unrelenting funk of all time on top of, he's one of the greatest guitarists of all time.
100%. And just the entertainer of the scent of the millennium.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? Like he's that guy, you know, he's a mythical creature, the greatest entertainer, a world-class guitar virtuoso. Plays bass like a motherfucker, dances, sings. He has 100,000 records to his name. Like, are you joking? And they're all amazing. Like, they're all like they're that good. So
yeah,
that was some crazy shit. But you should check out the set list. You'll be like, oh damn, no, he didn't. But then I'll be like, yes, he did.
It's so like I would love to see the rest of the week of programming at City Winery. Again, not shitting on City Winery, but it was probably like, you know. Washed up comedian Wednesday night.
Sure, the Fab Foe, you know, or no, again, no offense to those guys.
It's no offense to these, but then it's like, and then Thursday night, we're going to have fucking the biggest throwdown ever from Prince until the sun comes up. And then Friday night, we're going to go back to washed up comedian.
Yep. 100%, which is great, which is totally great.
Which is great for that comedian.
Totally cool.
Whoever we're talking about, it doesn't matter.
Listen,
Jim Brewer, it doesn't matter.
It's all good. It's all good. Listen, fucking, I like jokes about heavy metal. I love them. Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, dude. God, that is just special evening type stuff. That's so sick. Is there like, when you think about like what you've got going on right now and like, isn't it crazy to think that like there are people who leave your shows being like, dude, we just had Karina just throw down for us for, you know, 2 hours. And it was like the best. And we got to meet her afterwards and everything. Is it crazy to kind of think about like creating those sort of like moments for folks? Because I feel like you are already doing that.
Thank you, dude. I mean, that just, you know, I it's so surreal to me and I can't even like, you know, I think because I grew up having such a compulsion to go and to see live music in such an intense way. And like, I know what that environment did for me as a concert goer. It means so much to me as a performer to, you know, is curating these moments for people theoretically and, you know, just getting so much insane joy out of doing it that I hope that translate, you know what I mean? And people say it does. They're just like, nobody is having more fun on stage than you. And I'm like, well, I love this shit so much. Like I literally love it so much. And, you know, the idea that my joy could permeate a crowd and, you know, leave people feeling like, dude, like, Karina's putting on a show and it's a party and everyone's invited. Like, that's what I want to create for people. You know what I mean? I want it to just be a super positive, welcoming place where you can forget about all your bullshit in your life for 2 hours and then leave feeling really stoked, you know, because I had that with Prince and I had that with Rage and I had that with Pearl Jam and I had that with, you know, the fucking 75 Allman Brothers shows I've seen and like all, you know, all of these things. It's like, I know what it feels like to be in the crowd and to get something so needed out of these live music experiences. So I, you know, again, I am shocked, humbled, honored if people leave my shows feeling any sort of way, but you know, God willing, it just keeps growing and I'm able to kind of architect these, you know, super fun, dancey, rocking, psychedelic, exploratory, fun zones. And that's all I want. It's, and then by the way, like, you know, it's just as self-serving as it is anything else too, because I love that shit and I need that shit. You know what I mean? Like it's to be able, it's such a, it's a circle, you know, it's like, oh my God, like you guys enjoying this. You don't even know how much I'm enjoying you. And like, it's like, holy shit, such a circle of holy fuckness, you know? And I'm just stoked that I'm able to do this at all in my lifetime, you know? And if it ended tomorrow, it would already be enough, you know?
Yeah.
And hopefully it doesn't end tomorrow and hopefully it just keeps going. But every second I'm able to do this, I like am pinching myself big time, big time.
Well, circle of holy fuckness is certainly the title of this episode. That's
that's
for sure. That's for sure.
Let's get real, man. Let's get real. What it is.
Yeah. It's, I mean, it is so clear that you are, you know, having fun up there. If you've even seen a 2 second clip of your live show, it's like, you can tell who is having a blast. And yeah, that's when you're in an audience, like you don't have to know a damn thing about the bass. You can understand when someone, a performer, is having a good time or when they're phoning it in. And yeah, like that, then that's how that circle relationship gets started. And it's very cool to see you ripping out there and people being stoked and like people being stoked that you're going to be on the show. I got to like release that you're going to be on the show beforehand. And people were like, holy fuck. it's sick as hell.
That's so sweet.
Yeah, yeah. So you've got shows coming up this year, some sold out stuff already happening. Do you have any shows that you're playing alongside anybody that you're stoked to meet or like, you know, play alongside or rub elbows with?
A ton. I mean, like, talk about freaking out about, like, I don't know, the one that jumps out to me is when we got, you know, like, you know, personally invited to play with Derek and Susan. Dusty Trucks Band in, you know, their home state of Florida for their own festival. I was just like, wait, like that is crazy for me on a lot of levels. So that I'm just like kind of pinching myself.
Yeah.
A ton of amazing festivals, you know, we're already like, it's, you know, we're speaking and it's the middle of February and I feel like I'm playing like 100 festivals this year. I'm just like, wow. Like if I could only, like, it's so cool. Every, you know what I mean? Like,
name every band on every lineup that you're playing with.
Yeah. Sublime, Tosh Sultana, Lake Street Dive, Daniel.
Good. Keep going.
Country. You
got 400 to go.
Yep. Andy Frasco in the UN. Definitely a lot of them. All that stuff, all that stuff. No, I mean, it's the sort of, to me, I mean, to be a band that plays festivals like that, it's like you have your festival friends and you make new ones and like you see each other all summer long and you're just like, you know, that shit is so fun. It's amazing. You're just like backstage and you're meeting so-and-so and hanging out with your old friends. And, you know, it's a very convivial vibe, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm all about that. Very stoked for that. And yes, yeah, stoked for all, you know, all the headline stuff, all, you know, I'm doing some shows with the Disco Biscuits in a couple weeks and they're my dear friends and I love them very much. And they've really, you know, helped me and rolled out a real red carpet for me in a lot of ways. And I just appreciate them for that. And as dudes, they're like the coolest, funniest guys. So I'm stoked. And Jazz Fest is going to be crazy. We're going to have a great Jazz Fest. I'm way about all that. Yeah, no, I mean, it's all happening. And, you know, my New York show that we announced and put on sale last week, it sold out, you know, 650 tickets in 7 hours. I'm like, that's, for me, unprecedented. Like, I almost shat myself. I was like, wait, what? Sold out now? We're already sold out? Like, so, you know, people are like, hey, I want to come to Racket. But it sold out. I'm like, holy shit, you're right.
Yeah.
It did sell out. That shit is crazy. Like, that's like,
maybe next time, buddy.
Oh, yeah. Totally. You know, maybe if you had bought in the pre-sale, things would be different for you. That's a real precedent for you. No, I'm just kidding. I'm half kidding. You know. So, yeah, maybe that'll, you know, teach you to buy in the pre-sale, sir. My bodega guy.
Like, hey, right. He's like, what the fuck, man?
He's like, yo, you know, you come in here every day. I'm like, yeah, man, totally. He's like, so do you think you got me for Racket? I'm like, yeah. You know, man, maybe next time you got to buy in the preset. No, I'm just kidding. I'm like, of course I got you. Of course. Anyway, it's all very exciting, Cam. I'm just like kind of having a moment of just like, you know, complete immense gratitude, you know, and it's really kind of exciting to see, you know, growth, you know, or whatever you want to call it. I just, it's less growth and it's more continuation. It's the ability to keep going.
Cause momentum.
It's not, this is all a series of false peaks. You know what I mean? Like theoretically, I don't care about, you know, the next thing or the next thing. It's just like the process is so fun and just being able to do it and playing with my dudes and keep, you know, I don't know. Like if we played 15 festivals last summer and we're playing 30 this year, I'm like, that's just more opportunities for fun. You know? Like, and it's just really cool to just be able to keep going. That's all it is.
Well, it's so sick to hear from you. I'm honored to have you on the pod because your schedule's nuts these days. And so I was happy to carve out an hour and talk about some shows. And I wish you just the best on everything moving forward. I can't wait till you come to LA again.
Oh, I can't wait. I'll be there in November and I can't wait to see you there. And thanks for having me, dude. This was so much fun. And we're going to be besties IRL at some point, you know, and I look forward to making some comedic sketches with you.
Okay.
You know, I feel like it's going to happen. We're going to have, a viral reel. You know what I'm saying? It's going to be about probably Dave Matthews. Maybe not. Maybe it's
listen,
else, but I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be great.
You're the one working with Larry David these days. And so maybe you've got some sort of writing. Yeah.
That totally. You Dude, I'll put you in touch 100%. We can get LD in the building. He can talk about Carter Buford. That'd be great. Like we
get him out here.
It's going to be great. Thank you so much for having me, dude. What a pleasure. And great thing you got going on here. Great thing you got going on here. I really was stoked to talk about some concerts that I have enjoyed. Seriously.
Can't tell you how much I appreciate it, Karina.
Oh, come on. Blast. Total blast. And you be good, all right? You be good. And I'll see you in Los Angeles, if not sooner. But this has been really spectacular. Thank you, dude.
I appreciate you. So that was a little bit of music from Loom. Also, a great conversation that I had with Karina Reichman. Guys, that is season two. That's what we got going for season two. There's another episode out right now with actor and comedian Chris Witoski that you should absolutely be checking out. He tells maybe the craziest fish story that I've ever heard in my life. I want to thank Karina so much for coming on and being just a huge guest on this season. I hope that you guys enjoyed that conversation. She is quite literally the best. And like she said, I hope to become buddies. I hope that we're old pals soon.
again, guys, I cannot thank you enough for the support that you showed Best Show Ever, for the kind words that you guys wrote in messages or the kind words that you shared in person when we saw each other. Thank you guys so much for listening along. And I want to thank everybody who helped out making this season happen, whether you reached out and wanted to be a part of the episodes and we got to make that happen, or to the management and the people who put me in contact with some very cool folks to interview this season. Thank you guys so much. There will be a season 3 coming up. I'm already in the works on that, and we're going to hope to get that out a little quicker than we did between season 1 and season 2. Just because I'm having a lot of fun with it right now. And so I hope you guys feel the fun that we're having on the podcast. I hope you guys feel the fun. And I hope that you enjoyed this season. All of season 2 is out right now. Go enjoy all those episodes. If there's one that you missed that you're really looking for, they're all out for you. Everything's out. Thank you all so much. I can't tell you how much I appreciate the support. Until next time, guys, have a great show.
Hello, Tom May here, host of Future Friday. I've spent the last 15 years on the road with my band, The Menzingers, where I've met all kinds of wild and fascinating people. So I started a podcast. On Future Friday, I talk to fellow musicians about the moments that made them, their passions outside of music, and the curiosities that tie us all together. I've also talked to the likes of UFO researchers, magicians, soldiers, and documentary filmmakers, and I'm constantly searching for folks that can shape and change our view of the world. You can check out Future Friday wherever you like.
Hey, this is Steve Choi, host of the Musicians Guild podcast, part of the Sound Talent Media podcast network. Within the four walls of the Musicians Guild, we'll be discussing the habits, idiosyncrasies, experiences, and general psychology of my friends and peers all involved with music in various capacities. Listen and subscribe at SoundTalentMedia.com.